Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast, episode 3. I'm sorry I've been gone so long. Life intervened, and you guys know how I am. I'm going to be more consistent from now on. We're going to take a little bit of a health detour this week. I'm going to focus on health. I'm going to interview one of our old Texans employees, Roberta Anding, later on the week. Today, I'm bringing in one of my old teammates, one of my very good friends, guy that was drafted by the Minnesota Vikings in the second round, spent 4 years there before coming here to Houston in 2002. We played together here on the first Texans teams. It's Kylie Wong. Kylie, how the hell are you?
What's up, man? Dude, good. I like it. I like the setup you got going here. This is going to be great.
You're my first official non-Garrett the Web Guy guest.
Oh, all right.
You're the first actual like ex-athlete or somebody from outside of the Sports Radio 610 world that's come on the show.
Dude, that's mad love. Thank you, brother.
You are currently, since we're doing kind of a health theme, you are currently the owner of the Athletic Room in Bel Air.
Yep.
Tell me.
Actually, yeah, two locations now.
Oh, you opened up the second one.
Yeah, we have one on Bel Air, or one in Bel Air, and we have one right there kind of in museum district on Montrose.
So you and I had kind of a similar experience in the NFL and that we got, it was ugly at the end.
Yeah.
We went out like in a flurry of broken limbs and joints and carnage all over the place. And I think we both kind of committed ourselves afterwards to getting back in shape and trying not to become that cautionary tale of
For sure.
what happens to ex-NFL players. But you, I think we both also did the same thing where we experimented with other stuff career-wise immediately afterwards and kind of bounced around a little bit. Tell me what you did for the first 4 or 5 years right after you were done in the NFL.
So right after I was done, you know, towards the end of my career, I was actually kind of already getting into real estate. So I was had this apartment complex, I guess, portfolio, so to speak, that I went in and just kind of really took over, right? So as opposed to...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, as opposed to having it, you know, being ran by a third party, I went in and wanted to learn the business. I wanted to... And it was interesting. It was really, really fun. Like from the standpoint of what I learned from that experience is I do not need to make good decisions. I just need to stop bad decisions from being made.
Okay.
Right. And just by stopping bad decisions, you could essentially increase your net operating income, right?
Because you took over an apartment building that was not in good shape at all.
It was in fine shape. I guess what you're referring to. It was kind of a hood apartment.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Oh, okay.
So it was, you know, it was
I remembered that you had to go in and do a lot of work to it.
There was a lot of work to be done.
Okay.
The structure itself was good, but the building, I thought they were C apartments until I actually went to C apartments. Then I realized, oh, I have D apartments.
Okay.
And so it was tough. I mean, it was a tough neighborhood. There was a lot of stuff going on. There was gang activity going on. You know, all the things that you need to kind of, you know, get in the middle of as an owner.
You had gang activity going on in your apartment complex.
Dude, I didn't have a gang. I had a dead body one time that was parked in an abandoned car on my property. I mean, like, this is crazy stuff. Like, you just don't realize.
What was he dead of?
It wasn't good. We had a call in.
Okay. He didn't go of natural causes.
He did not go of natural causes and then put himself in the trunk of an abandoned car. He was in the trunk.
How'd you find it? Did it smell?
It smelled. And
who actually opened up the trunk?
The police did.
Did you actually look at it?
I did not know.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was basically what we had is we had a, you know, kind of police that would patrol.
Uh-huh.
So kind of, you know, evening times, you know, obviously on the weekends.
Yeah.
And so he basically got the call and had to go check it out.
So you had to come in, you had to clean up dead bodies. You probably, I'm guessing, had to evict a few people or just try to encourage other people to move in. And it all during all this time, what's your stress level like?
You know, my stress level, I mean, it was fun. Like,
you're one of the most infuriatingly cheerful people I've ever met.
We were doing fine, yeah, so I wasn't over. Yes, there were times where you're like, dude, what, you know, you worry about it at night, just about the unknown, about what you're able to control.
Yeah.
But by and large, you know, it was kind of going fine. It was going well. I wasn't, you know, overly concerned, overly stressed about, you know, running it. I just ended up getting out of it. Because we ended up moving to LA.
Right.
And so, you know, that was kind of why I divested from those, because I really believe, you know, strongly after kind of having that experience of kind of going in and seeing, you know, because we had, you know, I had a manager who said, you know, apartment 105 is empty. And then I walk in and it's fully vacant. I mean, you know, it's occupied, right? Yeah. And so it's occupied and, you know, clearly that tenant was just paying cash and then it wasn't showing up on the books.
Oh, yeah,
so
no
I believe in, you know, owning the real estate kind of where you live mm-hmm. so you can check on it.
Mm-hmm. So you weren't going to move to LA and be an absentee landlord.
Exactly. And I think that's kind of how you get these distressed, dilapidated properties that just aren't a good product, aren't safe for the community. That type of stuff is kind of, you know, absentee, you know, owners that neglect it.
Right.
And so that's kind of why I divested from that. And moved out to LA.
Yeah.
And that was kind of what I did.
So you were in LA for a few years and then how did you end up coming back to Houston?
Well, it was funny because I was in LA for less than a year. So my wife really wanted to move back to the West Coast.
And I remember talking to you on the phone at the time. You were trying to figure out if maybe you were going to go coach with Vic Fangio.
Right, absolutely.
Was that at Stanford at the time?
It was Stanford, yeah. I was at Stanford for the time. I was thinking about if I was going to go up there, go coach for Stanford. I was kind of just playing around out there as well. And then what ended up ultimately bringing me back was I really enjoyed financial markets.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to come back to Houston to see if, you know, hedge funds or something like that would be of interest to me. Kind of lined up a number of different opportunities, whether it was kind of wealth management. I mean, different spectrums of the financial space, whether it was wealth management, whether it was, you know, actual trading with hedge funds, and ended up realizing that with four kids, with a crazy busy schedule that I wanted to kind of still be there and be a part of my kids, you know, daily routines, coaching their stuff, you know, participating with them, that brokering was a good option. And so I went into derivatives. So basically gas options and brokered gas options.
You talked me into taking the commodities broker test, series three.
Yeah,
that stuff's hard, man.
Dude, it's hard.
There's a whole lot. I got good enough to where I could pass the test, but I was like, this is not the life for me.
Well, it's funny because the test is the easy part.
Yeah.
What's really hard is just what I found out was the toll and just the tax that it puts on your body,
mm-hmm.
right? Because not only are you in the office and you're just sedentary and you're just sitting for, you know, 8 hours a day, but then after work, you know, you can try to get a little workout, but then you entertain.
Right.
Right. So then you're steak dinners, then you're drinking, which sounds awesome and really fun at the beginning. And then you're just like, you start dreading it. Like, because you can literally feel, as an athlete, we're so in tune with our body. You can literally feel the damage we're doing to
our
body.
Like, you're just toxifying it. Absolutely. You're polluting it. Right?
I'm polluting
it. That's how you feel. Because that's one of my favorite words for saying that you were messed up, is saying you're polluted, but it is, because it just feels so much like what it is.
Oh,
because when you go in on a, like back when you're young and you'd go out after a game on a Sunday and you might only get 3 hours of sleep, and then all of a sudden you're in working out for some psychotic strength coach on Monday, you can feel, it's almost like you can feel the chemicals interfering with everything.
Oh, without question.
And that's what you felt like 24 hours a day.
24 hours a day. Yeah. And it was interesting because, and that's kind of how I ended up transitioning to what I'm doing now, the athletic room, is I was so frustrated with my body because, you know, here I was, you know, yes, we both kind of had injuries to kind of end our careers, right? But, you know, after rehab, after kind of doing all the stuff, the PT that I needed to do, I was fairly good. Like, I left the NFL, like, my body was in good shape.
Yeah.
And here I was in corporate America and I was just beating it down. I mean, I literally was having a tough time you know, working out. I was having a tough time.
Like finishing a workout or just even enjoying it.
Enjoying it. Yeah. Enjoying movement. That was the biggest thing.
You know, and I remembered, I actually talked about you to my neurologist yesterday. I say my neurologist. There was a neurologist. I was doing the baseline testing for the NFL concussion program. Which is, have you done that yet?
I have not,
It's grueling.
I bet.
You take like 6 hours worth of psychological assessments and everything. You're doing puzzles and word games and all this stuff. But when I'm talking to the guy about, you know, staying healthy and staying mentally healthy and all that, they give you the checklist of things you should be doing. And I can remember having a conversation with you. You were the first person that ever had this same, I guess, recognition as I did when we were younger, was how mentally messed up I am if I don't work out.
Yeah.
Like if I don't, like I get depressed.
For sure.
I'll be grumpy. I'll be moody and everything. And I was kind of telling you that when we were on the plane one time and you're like, yeah, Marisa, your wife says the exact same thing. Like if you're all of a sudden turning into non-bubbly Kylie, she just goes to tell you to work out.
Just go. So literally go, you just got to go, go for a run, go lift, do whatever you got to do because I need that daily thing. And that's a big part of our lives, right? Like if I, and that was interfering with it. To where I'm popping 4 Advil just to try to go get an hour workout,
right?
You know, and it was
living like that. It sounds like a stereotypical like 1960s businessman life where where you're working at the office. You might as well have been smoking all like in a smoky room, and then you go out afterwards and you have martinis or whatever, and then you go home and you do the whole same thing the next day.
Oh, without question. Yeah. It was like Henry VIII, right? You kind of are living like a king, but you're setting yourself up for gout.
You know
what I mean? Like that's you know, talk about polluting your body. That's essentially what the role was. And so I was frustrated. I knew that I wanted to take my body back. I was way too young. My whole goal, my entire life was to always be active. That was why I left the NFL when I did and kind of retired.
You wanted to be able to be healthy and active.
Maintain activity levels.
Yeah.
When I'm 85, I plan on deadlifting.
Right.
It probably is not 315, but it's going to, you know, I'm going to be able to be able
stuff
to go
off
through.
The ground.
For sure.
You're going to be avoiding the hip.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I knew that there's an easy way, the kind of the way that we took care of our body, just basic daily stuff that we can do, that we just feel so much better. We get rid of pain. We can function better, move better. And so that's kind of what I created the athletic room. I created it to mimic the support that we had as pro athletes, but now bring it to everybody, because I recognize everybody has these issues, not just elite athletes. And it's been a lot of fun.
Well, because I know you use the methods of, is it Pete Egoscue?
Pete Egoscue is awesome.
Yeah.
It's not his methods.
You don't use
no.
his methods. Okay, right. Excuse me. Oh, maybe
but his philosophy, absolutely.
You know what? I was talking to somebody at the Super Bowl about Egoscue and it made me think of you.
Yeah.
But it's kind of just that same theory of being sure everything's aligned right while you're moving. And you guys do a stretching technique that I've had, Mike Meltzer has had it done.
Right.
And it's so much better than, remember the tank?
Yes.
The training athletes. For sure, that used to come in, like, be extreme, like, they were sadists.
Yeah, they were.
They would stretch the hell out of you. And I think there was value to that, but as a lot of the studies are showing now, that extreme stretching can be kind of counterproductive.
That extreme stretching is counterproductive,
right?
So, like, if you look at the, you know, kind of that methodology, like the static stretching methodology, like that pin and hold stretch methodology, it actually reduces performance. It reduces speed.
Especially if you do it before performance, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So that's kind of why everything is dynamic. Mm-hmm. Whenever we think of Dan Riley, whenever we think of, you know, the stretching before practices, everything is a dynamic movement because that obviously warms up your muscles, you know, elongates the muscles, but doesn't actually take away from performance.
And you work with a lot of people that do 5Ks and do marathons and everything. A lot of your clients are like that. It's amazing how ingrained it is in people's psyche that you gotta stretch before you work out.
Right.
Like no matter how much, because it's going on. It's like 20 years of evidence now, isn't it? That stretching before exercise really doesn't, or at least especially static stretching before exercise doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, I mean, it is funny because
it can actually hurt your performance.
It's so programmed in us, right? Like, I mean, who taught us stretching? Our PE coaches in like first grade, right? Like, I mean, and just think about, nothing to take away from PE coaches in first grade, but, you know, they're not the most current on kind of methodology, and especially, you know, back when we were growing up, which is, you know, the 80s, right?
Oh, yeah. No, that was when it was a gym coach. Like, exactly. It is, like, now they try to actually do physical education. That was a gym coach.
That was, yes,
who just
exactly.
wanted to do something for 5 minutes before. It's just a waste of time before you went.
Yeah.
Well, no, you see what the sprinters and everything are doing now where, oh, actually, it's the opposite of stretching. Like, you're warming up by doing quarter squats.
Right.
And things like that, like, really taxing the muscles
yep.
and the nervous system more than trying to, when you stretch, you actually relax the nervous system, right? Or if you do the old static stretching.
Yeah, the old static stretching. Yeah. You're trying to, but in reality, you just, it's very difficult to do that because once you get to that point where you get tension, we all know it,
yeah.
right? You can't go any further until you relax that muscle, but uh-huh. that muscle is really contracted.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? I mean, your body is trying to fight kind of, you know, where it is. So,
yeah.
so we basically eliminated all that. Everything is dynamic on our tables. We have athletic, you know, former athletic trainers from the Dynamo, from the Texans, and everything is dynamic and through movement. And
yeah.
so the idea is it should never hurt, but you get this huge gain of kind of range of motion. And it's funny because, you know, a lot of what the athletic room and a lot of, as I've kind of dug into the science, I'm super into this biohacking. I'm sure we'll talk about this
yeah.
later.
No, that annoys the hell out of me.
Yeah. but
okay. Yeah, let me give you my quick definition of biohacking.
Okay. Yeah.
This is life. I won't talk about biohacking because uh-huh. I think there's a lot of value. It's this whole life hacking movement that comes out of Silicon Valley. I really feel like most, like 90% of the people in Silicon Valley doing it, it's like better and more efficient ways to become a bigger asshole. Like, it just, it's almost like I'm going to meditate so I can dominate the competition.
No, you're right. That is, I mean, it's
be
always
more
around
serene
performance.
So I can eviscerate and kill smaller companies.
You're right. No, yeah. you're right. So I can go and acquire and, yeah. No,
but,
I mean, but it's funny because when I look at this, biohacking is none of it's new,
right?
Like everything is just how
interval
people
training.
Used to do it back in the day. You know, like it's really, really funny to me at how you know, it's basically all coming back to the same thing.
But hey, some of it has to be because, and this is where it does have validity, is that we live in this world where technology has so infiltrated everything we
right.
do. That you almost have to make a willful effort to get back to simple.
True.
Like to do everything, to live in this city and to have my smartphone and everything, you have to do stuff to get back to living mentally like it was like for my grandpa when he was on a farm all day.
Right.
And barely, you know, had close relationships with a few people and saw birds, you know.
And actually touched
yeah.
earth,
right,
you know,
yeah,
and like,
earth,
you know,
ate
like,
food that
for
wasn't,
sure. Yeah.
Like, people talk about going paleo and live like the cavemen. Fuck that. Excuse my language. It's like, no, live like your grandparents
that's
did.
That's it.
Like, that's all, like, 50, 60 years ago is a huge difference.
Huge difference.
But, okay, so what biohacking are you into right now?
No, so.
I didn't mean to crap all
no,
over
no, no,
it.
No, 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 not biohacking, but I just find it funny because it's not, you know, when I really look at it, it's not necessarily biohacking, right?
Right.
It's just look back at, like, what did people used to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you look at, like, so I'm really into breathing. So if you look at breathing, and
I
kind of this,
breathing as well.
Yeah, I do. Breathing is really good,
like,
isn't
you're
it?
You're into breathing
after
every
sleeping.
Other living,
it's pretty awesome. You know, I mean, you look at like the Tibetans and kind of their meditation
right.
thing. You look at India and their and pranayama.
It all comes
you look
back
at
to
Tai
breathing.
Chi. You look at Qigong. Right. It all yeah. comes back to breathing. It's just it's kind of these basic.
You know
things.
What Eddie Vedder is talking about in that song, his Just Breathe song.
I think so, dude.
Okay.
He might have been a Wim Hof fan, and we didn't even
know.
You know,
he's definitely into yoga and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, you're into this. Oh, the Wim Hof.
Yeah.
The Wim Hof. What is it called? Meditation?
It's called the Wim Hof Method.
This,
so
is,
he's
the, this is the crazy dude that submerges himself in ice water for hours at a time,
yeah,
right?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he has all these world records. So he's submerged himself in ice for two hours. He's, you know, he's on these TED Talks. He's very well studied, incredibly well
yeah.
studied. And he deals with a lot of, you know, autoimmune type stuff,
uh-huh.
right? A lot of his people who follow him are RA people or, you know, fibromyalgia or something that's kind of attacking their nervous system. And it's really, really fascinating because it's Tummo meditation is what it is.
Okay.
It's kind of like
Tummo?
Tummo.
Like
or almost like Kundalini breathing.
Okay.
Right? So it's like
sure.
this is yeah, exactly.
I don't know what
that's
hell
a yoga
that is.
Term
okay.
for any of you
oh,
yogis
right. okay.
out there.
I don't go to yoga, I sweat too much.
You know,
it's embarrassing.
Yeah, no, it is embarrassing. That's why I like hot yoga, because in hot yoga
everybody's
a mess.
Sweating. You've seen me sweat though, it's different. It's a whole different level. It's like pools of sweat.
I could it would look like a murder scene around your yoga mat.
Like,
in a flow yoga where all the other
women
ladies are glistening,
and
yeah,
on their, yeah, on the, in my pool of sweat.
So you know, it's really, really he's really fascinating and really well studied,
right?
Because not only does he do these amazing feats, like, you know, run marathons in, you know, in the North Pole or in the desert,
yeah,
but he also does things like they took him into a lab and injected him with endotoxins, uh-huh, basically E. coli bacteria cell wall,
yeah,
right?
And then he does his, like, explain real quick, what is it? What's the basic premise behind it?
So the basic premise behind it is basically how, you know, divers, uh-huh, guys who, you know, free divers,
yeah,
you know, kind of their
who
breathing
go, like,
technique. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a very similar breathing technique to that. And then he does a lot of breath holds.
Like where you you saturate your body
with oxygen and hold your breath, right?
Okay.
Empty lungs. And what that has, from a performance standpoint, and why you're seeing it so much in the Navy SEALs or in 1500 meter runners once they get to collegiate level,
yeah,
or even, you know, pro athletes,
okay,
is because by doing breath work along with your training, uh-huh, you actually increase red blood cell count,
okay,
in your body, which means you can deliver oxygen better to your muscles, and you actually increase your VO2 max by 5% without additional
without
training.
Anything different.
Right.
And these are
just
elite athletes already.
These are
so
an
like
elite
a
5% athlete.
5% increase for an elite athlete.
It's huge.
Is absurd.
I mean, okay, so that's why you're seeing it so much, you know, kind of, you know,
see,
kind
I'm
of
so
coming
far out of the loop. I don't even really, like, this is becoming a big thing.
It's becoming a big thing.
Really?
Yeah.
And the special ops dudes are all doing it.
All, absolutely.
Or not all of them, but a lot
no,
of them.
No, a
okay
lot of them are doing
really
it. I mean, it's literally a part of, like, training now.
Yeah. Because like cold water submersion is part of it too.
Cold water submersion is a part of it. Yeah.
Is that why? What's the benefit of that?
Just the same kind of idea. They've just found that you know, like this endotoxin thing.
Uh-huh.
So they stuck him with endotoxins, and he should have had flu-like symptoms,
mm-hmm,
you know. But with his breathing and with some cold, he didn't elicit a response.
Really?
So they're just like, dude, this is an anomaly. This is weird.
Yeah.
And he goes to them. He goes,
sounds
hey,
like Wolverine or something. And,
oh, without question.
Yeah.
And so they're just like, dude, you're just a freak. Whatever. We're just going to dismiss it.
Yeah.
He's like, well, let me take 30 people who have never been exposed to this before
mm-hmm,
the Wim Hof method. I'm going to train them for 6 months and I'm going to bring them back.
Okay.
So he brought them back. They did the same thing. They didn't elicit a response.
Really?
And so, you know, part of the cold, just like with anything else, and just like with what, you know, what we've been dealing with so much kind of in, you know, our new lifestyle,
mm-hmm,
is it addresses inflammation,
mm-hmm,
right? So by, you know, oxygenating cells and by addressing inflammation, you can really make significant changes in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, so it's been really fascinating, even on my own, like on my own body, and just the way that I've dropped ridiculous amount of weight, you know, without necessarily
just
trying.
Just when you started doing that.
Just when
it
I started
just changed
doing that.
The way your body operated.
Completely.
Maybe changed your appetite.
Yeah, everything ties in together,
okay,
so well.
So Wim Hof,
I'm a huge
how do I spell Wim Hof?
W-I-M-H-O-F.
Okay, everybody Google Wim Hof.
Yeah.
And then everybody else do the research and tell me if I should do it or not.
Oh, it's a
no-brainer.
Like,
I know it's a no-brainer. I'm so lazy. Not in doing stuff. It's in, you know, it's, you know, when you're like, all right, I got to learn about something now. It's
yeah
going to take me an hour. But
an hour.
When
yeah
I could be. Dude.
I love it.
I'm sitting there trying to figure out which Netflix series to start next yesterday, and I had stress over it. It's like, oh, it's going to be a big investment in my time. I landed on the Santa Clarita diet.
Dude,
it's actually really good.
Have you watched Wild Wild Country yet?
No.
You check out Wild Wild Country. It's because it's from Antelope, Oregon,
yeah,
right? So it was around my time, and it was when basically this community from India
yeah
came over and took over the town. Like I'm talking about, took over the sheriff's office, took over you know, the mayor, renamed the town. They went
what
into
year
this,
was this?
It was probably like 81, 82, kind of in those.
So it's a true story. Okay.
Yeah. Right, I mean, and even
out
so much as, and they end up having some shadiness going on there. And even so much as, we're going to try to, basically kind of kill one of the, I don't know,
well,
someone high up
in the
state.
Once you have control of the, once you have control of the local police force, I would totally do that.
Right. Yeah.
I'd kill everybody.
Yeah. It was unbelievable. It's unbelievable. They poison people. Like,
really?
I mean, it's a crazy, it's really fun. It's okay. A really good documentary.
Okay. So I'm going to check that out after I'm done with the Santa Clarita. Is it Santa Clarita? Is that the name of the town in California?
Yeah. I think
yeah.
So.
Santa Clarita diet. It's, Drew Barrymore. But the Wim Hof meditation, is in the cryotherapy part of it, or the cold part of it. Right. You guys do cryotherapy, which is the extreme cold exposure at the athletic room.
Yep.
What's the crossover with like that and potentially autoimmune disease, the way you're saying that Wim Hof might also have some kind of beneficial effect?
So, I mean, look, the whole point, so, you
I
know,
should say inflammation.
Inflammation.
Because I don't want to be, you're not sitting here like Brady's guy trying to say you can cure cancer or anything.
No.
But inflammation can be addressed.
Inflammation can be reduced, right? Yeah. So there's a number of studies that you can pull from. But at the end of the day, let's make it real, real simple. Inflammation is a big issue because of our diet, uh-huh. right? And because of the way our bodies, and not to mention, it's also a big issue because of our cell phones, you know, with notifications and just cortisol release and traffic and all of that type of stuff.
Yeah, because we tend to think of it as psychological stress and psychological alone, but where when you are, when it's not just the divided attention or anything. When you get that notification, you actually release cortisol.
Exactly, which is your stress hormone.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. And so it then starts, you know, which is inflammation. Yeah. And what we're finding is inflammation is, you know, a part of all the stuff that we're dealing with, right? Not only is it something that accelerates any type of aging, so from an anti-aging standpoint, and I'm not talking about necessarily the beauty aspect, you know, skin or whatever. I'm talking about just the actual aging process of your body. Inflammation is a part of it. Depression, inflammation is a part of it, mm-hmm. right? A lot of these, any of these RA, rheumatoid arthritis, you know, fibromyalgia, all these type of things.
My wife, which is chronic inflammatory response syndrome, which is something we've talked about.
Right.
And this is something that a few doctors are working on right now. And there's some novel research, but it's all under that same umbrella. It's inflammation is the issue.
Inflammation. Yeah. And so by reducing overall inflammation, yeah. we knew this as athletes. That's kind of why both you and I were in the ice tub.
In the cold tub.
Every single day.
Poor Aaron Glenn. Little Aaron Glenn was in the ice tub. Who's like at 3% body fat. He's miserable.
Exactly.
And he'd gruel, grit his teeth for 20 minutes every day.
Right. Yeah. And we knew it intuitively, right? Yeah. And so because our bodies, let's just, you know, if we look back at our programming, you know, we have always had to deal with, you know, mild cold stress at times,
yeah.
right? We would have winter and we would have mild cold stress. So cold stress is good for us. And so that's kind of the premise behind it, is trying to help people reduce kind of overall inflammation, because it will, not only will it change kind of pain mm-hmm. and perception of pain. We had this really interesting study that kind of showed that, but it also
that exposure to cold, it makes you more tolerant, pain tolerant?
Without question. Okay. So literally we had a person come in and we had her do basically universal pain and Tegner's activity level and just chart it. Mm-hmm. And basically she'd be like, she's coming in. She's like, I'm hot. I'm at like a 6. Yeah. You know, I'm hurting. My knee's really hurting. And then she come out, she's like, you know, I'm about a 3.
Yeah.
You know, and it was kind of a natural version of Advil. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just a very natural process as opposed to putting drugs in your body.
Okay, so cold is good. You and I have known that for a long time, even without necessarily knowing how or why. And is it fair to say that people still don't quite know why? They know that it works, and they have theories about why it might work. But what...
It is, you know, it's fascinating. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you could look up studies on ice, does ice work?
Yeah.
We all know 100%. Like, there's no doubt about it. Yeah. I'm putting ice on. It's inconclusive, right?
Yeah, because I think even with orthopedic surgeons, I remember talking to Dr. Lowe, the team doctor, about this, that in Germany, I don't know if it's still
this
way.
They use heat.
Yeah, they don't like using ice at all.
Right.
Where I just know intuitively, like, no, it feels better if you put some ice on it.
Like, it's a no-brainer. Like, yeah. I actually will crave ice. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, now I got to get back to this. Is it the Wim Hof meditation? Is it a combination of that with the cold? When did you first notice that you lost a bunch of weight?
So it was really
because
interesting.
You do. It's annoying. That's another thing. Yeah. You're constantly bubbly attitude, uh-huh. But also the fact that you do now. You've always looked in shape, but when you're done playing football. But when I knew you and you were doing the financial stuff,
right.
You don't look like you do now. Now right. you look like you're 28 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I literally took back my body. Yeah. I mean, it's been such a fun process. And so yes, it is a combination of both of them. I really believe that this Wim Hof, I believe breathing in general mm-hmm. is is really, really interesting what it kind of does to your weight loss. So between the cryotherapy for just cold exposure, right? Because there's a number of reasons, whether it's metabolic, whether it's brown adipose tissue that essentially helps eat white fat, or it's this breathing, this idea of oxygenating cells. The combination of those just allows me to do whatever I want now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been really, really fun. It's been really interesting. And it's not like I've changed my eating habits. I know you're going to have, you know, an awesome nutritionist next.
Yeah.
But I haven't changed my life. Like, I still drink. We have four kids. Uh-huh. You know, me and mama, we have to have, you know, she has to have a glass of champagne.
A little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, and I need to have my scotch. So it's not like I've made these drastic life changes, except for the fact that I've introduced these.
Mm-hmm.
And it has just, my body has responded really, really well.
Do you still lift weights?
I'm getting back into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting.
I have a hard time. You know what ends up happening? Unless I'm doing like a 15-minute intense circuit.
Yeah.
I get bored and I start to feel like I'm just like, what am I doing here? I was sitting here waiting between sets and everything. And it's all that drudgery comes back. I don't care. Like, I don't care. I don't care how much I bench. No. I don't care if I can squat or anything. I don't really care how much. I don't care what I look like. I care what I feel like anymore.
Right.
But there's times, though, this is what happens. I get into the gym and my ego gets the better of me. Because then I'll see dudes that are yoked and strong and everything. And then that competitive urge kicks in.
For sure.
And then that's what'll trigger me. And then I'll do like a psychotic 3-week workout and be miserable I'll have headaches. I'll pull a hamstring or something.
Well, it's funny. So my lifting now, what I've realized is I have been able to kind of just say, hey, look, I'm just going to go about this different. Do you remember when we were hurt, whenever we'd come in really banged up with Dan Riley and we would do that 15 or 20 minute workout that was slow, all slow reps.
Right, yeah.
Right?
It's 8 seconds.
It takes
8 seconds to complete the concentric part of the exercise where you're pushing, or if it's a pull-up, you're pulling for 8 seconds.
Right, and then also the eccentric, right? Yeah. So there's this workout thing, and I think it's a great workout thing because the one thing is we have to lift weights because we need to try to offset just any loss of testosterone, right? So we're naturally going to be losing.
It actually stimulates testosterone and growth hormone.
Exactly, just lifting, putting muscles under stress, right? And so I've gone to that, which then is really, really nice because if you're going 8 seconds out and 8 seconds back, then you can't put a heavy weight on.
Right.
And people recognize that. And so it's not like I'm no longer competing with a guy because throwing weight around is fun.
Yeah,
it is. This is the most miserable workout that I do.
Oh, that 8 second reps. Yeah,
but it's 20 minutes.
It's awful. Yeah.
You know, it's 20 minutes three times a week.
Yep.
So
doing it on legs is really, really rough.
It's rough and it hurts. And, you know, and you have to, you know, you're going to basically failure and it's taxing mentally, but it's 20 minutes.
That's where and you're right, that part of your ego, like I'm ashamed to admit that my ego still can sway me or affect me that much, but there's that part of it where if I'm in the gym and I'm in there and somebody knows who I am, like that I used to play for the Texans and everything, and I'm sitting over there like trying to bench 185 and you stop like two reps before you get real tired because I want to be sure they just make it.
He must be warming up still. He must have got his bench press warm up. He's going to go over to this other exercise and come back.
And I'm going to roll my shoulder out a little bit, like, oh, shoulder's hurting. But it's just, I don't care about being strong anymore, and yet I don't like other people not knowing that I'm not as strong as
for sure,
used to be.
Without question. We don't need to have it because one thing I've learned, and this is kind of my new MO, especially kind of once I went through that with my body, is when I look back on my career, you know, I was obviously so focused in that moment, right? That play. And then I was so focused about that outcome of that game. And you're so focused about the outcome of the season. But in reality, you know, my performance was judged on my entire career.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's kind of the idea that I take now. My performance is based off of my career, and my career is my entire life.
Right.
Right. So I tell a lot of our clients now, I'm like, look, it's awesome. I love that you're, you know, doing 2-a-days at whatever, you know, gym you like to do and kind of high intensity type of stuff. But if you absolutely kill it in 2018, but cannot work out in 2025,
right.
Like what's the point?
Yeah.
Right. So you kind of work smart to this idea that you're working, you know, to stay active and healthy your entire life,
yeah.
And not just at this moment, at this individual workout.
There was an article about a guy, I can't think of his name right now. He's an offensive lineman who's kind of active in the, legalized marijuana movement, which I'm all for, but that's a whole nother topic. Except that I'm reading this article and he's talking about how he needs pot for his pain. But then in the middle of this article, as he's talking about how much he needs to smoke pot because he hurts so much, they're talking about this ridiculous workout he's going through,
right.
Where he's like doing weighted pull-ups and everything. And guys go through this when they've recently retired. Like, it takes a while to realize, wait a second, dude, like you don't have to damage your body. I mean, a lot of guys, you don't have to do it while you're playing either.
Right.
And that's one thing that Dan Riley and those guys are really good at. Our old strength coach was really good at stressing. But learning how to actually enjoy working out,
yeah.
As opposed to just looking at it as something that you're doing for utilitarian purposes and you're going to want to die the whole time you're doing it. You know, like when you're doing spring workouts in college and like you actually are hoping that you die, you're like, you're going into the fourth inning and you're like, please God, strike me dead.
Yeah,
I can't do this anymore. It doesn't have to be like that.
It does not. And it does. Yeah.
Unless you want it to, like unless every now and then, instead of chronically, like every single
That's
day.
That's the biggest difference, right? Like, you know, you can definitely have, I think as we age, you have like pick a workout that you're going to dominate,
yeah.
In 2 weeks out,
yeah.
Right? So Saturday from 2 weeks from now, my whole workout routine is going to be to go into this workout,
yeah.
And try to do my absolute best. You know, like,
yeah.
I'm talking about the CrossFitters and that type of stuff who are, you know, want to have, you know, still keep some kind of competitiveness to,
yeah.
Them, but they're able to kind of just, you know, pace themselves,
right.
Because they're not 21, 22.
Well, but that's what like
anymore.
The West Side Barbell guys figured out a long time ago, though, too, is that now that's not that you want a West Side Barbell lifestyle,
right?
Because these are really successful powerlifters. But the whole theory with Louis there was that you don't have to be like constantly on the verge of injury to improve your performance. Like,
right.
Staying healthy over the course of 5 years goes a lot further than blasting it and then getting injured and then blasting it as
for
hard
sure.
As you can again and then getting injured. So in a weird way, like that very unhealthy lifestyle of being a power lifter, like in carrying an extra 70 pounds, when it comes to taking care of your joints, they attack it the smart way instead of the dumb way. We ended up talking about a lot of this really cool stuff. There was one question I did,
yeah.
I wanted to get into race with you a little bit.
Okay.
Only because of this one question. And then I figured another time we can talk about this. But because
sounds good.
Everything going on in the NFL right now with the kneeling in protest of police brutality,
right.
Everything else going on in the world. We've reached a stage where things are very tense. Uh-huh. Not that it's ever not been tense with race, but the one question I'm curious about with you is now compared to 20 years ago, how long do you know a person before they look at you and finally have the guts to say, so Kylie Wong, what's your background? Because that's something you've had to deal with your whole life.
For sure.
So you're like, I think he's black, but his last name's Wong, and I don't know.
He has a girl's first name.
Do people even bother asking you anymore?
Yes, 20 years ago, it's,
yeah.
Real easy, right?
Right.
It does feel like we were less sensitive.
Yeah.
And people were like, yo.
But you're also hanging around 20-year-olds then,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, good point.
Know?
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit longer,
yeah.
For them to get around and be like, yo, so where, how does all of this kind of come together?
I can't even remember what it is. What's your upbringing?
So,
where are you from, son?
So I, well, I'm from Oregon.
Yeah.
So I'm from Eugene. But my dad, he basically was raised in Hawaii. So,
yeah.
He was born in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Papa Kalea, which is basically Hawaiian homestead land,
yeah.
Is where he was. He was raised Hanai, basically,
yeah.
Meaning someone someone other than his biological father,
yeah,
which is Grandpa Wong, who came from the outskirts of Beijing.
Okay.
Settled kind of that area. It's a very common procedure kind of in traditional Hawaii,
yeah,
to actually this idea of it takes a village, uh-huh, to raise, you know, a child.
Yeah.
And so he was just like, Grandpa Wong, that's my dad. That's who raised me. So that's how we took his last name.
Yeah.
So we do have black, we have Hawaiian, we have white. My kids now obviously have the Mexican in them.
Yeah.
I mean, we pretty much we cover, you know, the racial spectrum,
right,
by and large. I think
have you ever done the 23andMe or anything?
No, I was just thinking about it. I need to.
That would be really interesting.
That would be really, I'd love to.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I was, because it's funny.
But it has become such a more sensitive topic now.
But I don't know if it really has. It's just that everything's played out on social media.
Yeah.
And it's such, you see the most extreme responses because they get the most retweets or they get the most conversation.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, I'm still having the same conversations with guys I ever did. You know, I can have conversations with people of different races and ethnicities.
You know what? You know what? That's exactly what it is, right? Yeah. So, and I talk to my wife about this all the time. I argue that this is the safest time ever to raise children.
Uh-huh.
And she argues that it's the most dangerous time. Right. And so statistically, I'm right.
Uh-huh.
But if you look at Facebook, she's right.
Oh, right.
And because
they're not having as much sex. They're not getting pregnant as much. They're basically, I worry that they're a little too safe.
Right. No. Yeah. So statistically, it is the safest time ever.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's interesting at how we can have these two, you know, like opposing views just based off of looking at the world the same way.
Right.
And it is, you're right. The extremes, you hear about the extremes. Everything is real time. We know, you know, if something unfortunate happens in Georgia, we hear about it right now, you know, via Twitter or Facebook or that type of stuff. So,
oh, and I'm part of the problem. I'm on sports radio. We don't respond. But
you're right. That's a good point.
And yet, like Wade Smith and I were having a conversation the other day, both on and off air, about a lot of the current issues in the NFL, and we disagree on some things, but we managed to actually have a discussion about it.
Right.
Instead of when you're not trying to win every argument, you can actually have a discussion with people about things. So anyway, Kylie, really appreciate you coming in, man. I'm gonna rope you into this several more times at least, because it takes us 40 minutes to get through like two topics.
I know.
So I really appreciate you coming in. The Athletic Room, both in Bel Air and where is the other
on Montrose Boulevard, right there in Museum District.
And that little ding right there is Roberta Anding, who I'm going to be interviewing next. Really appreciate it, buddy.
Absolutely. Thank you, man.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.